Hold it, fellas. That don't move me. Let's get real, real gone for a change.
It's time to get real gone on the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour. Here's your host, James Riley.
This is Jammin' James Riley on your favorite hour for great music and interviews. It's the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour. Now coming up, we begin episode 1 of 4 with guitar legend Dick Dale.
Quentin Tarantino came up, my bass player, while I was on stage, and he gave him a note. Said, my name's Quentin Tarantino, I gotta talk to Dick Dale. Well, he didn't know who Quentin Tarantino was, so he threw the note away.
Much more from Dick coming up in just a little bit. Also, brand new tracks from the Sonics and Joe Bonamassa. Now let's kick it off with a group that will be at Rockabilly on the Route June 4th through the 7th in Tucumcari, New Mexico. From Japan, this is the Gretsch Brothers from their album Snake and Dragon with their cover of Buddy Holly's Crying, Waiting, Hoping on the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour.
You off my mind. Crying, waiting, hoping you come back. You're the one I love when the sick bites you all the time. Crying, my tears keep falling all night long. And always on to keep crying, waiting, hoping you come back maybe someday soon. Soon you change it, you'll be mine. Changing, you'll be mine. Changing.
Jackrabbit Slim from their album Sleazeabilly and Lula May. Now, we've got so much ground to cover with guitar legend Dick Dale, so let's just get into it right now. From 1959, here's Ooh Wee Marie.
Hi, this is Dick Dale. Keep it tuned here for the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour with my man, Jammin' James Riley. Listen to the thunder.
Wanna hug you every morning. Out of my sight. Ooh, wee Marie. Well, I like it the way you walk. Ooh, wee Marie. Well, I like it the way you talk. You got that certain something so hard to explain. You got that cool and crazy look that's driving me insane. Ooh, wee Marie. Well, I like your pretty eyes. Marie, well, you're just my kind of size. If you could only love me the way that I love you, I'd say, ooh, wee, Marie. You make my dreams a come true. I wanna hug you in the morning. I wanna hug you every night. I never ever wanna lay up to you, well, out of my sight. I wanna kiss you pretty baby, like we never kissed before. I wanna kiss and kiss you more and more and more. Ooh, wee Marie. Well, I like your pretty smile. Ooh, wee Marie. You're just my kind of style. Oh, well, I'm crazy about you, baby. Be my steady date. I wish that I could call for you each Saturday at 8. Marie. Come on and say you'll be mine. Well, if you could only love me the way that I love you, I'd say, oh, we, Marie. You make all my dreams a come true.
Going back to the beginning, 1959. Ooh-wee Marie. Hey, for the next four episodes, we have guitar legend Dick Dale joining us. We've got a lot of ground to cover, so let's start with something that might be a little bit of a surprise to you. Now, when you think of Dick Dale, you think of the loud guitars. But you know, he fell in love with country music pretty early on, and it's something that continues to this day. Here's Dick Dale.
You could put all the music together, for instance, jazz, rock and roll, rhythm and blues, soul, all that kind of music, and put it all together in one side and put country music in one side, and it would be 50-50. The difference between what I used to call, when I used to start strumming back in 19, my God, before 1955, I was doing it when I was in seventh grade. I was giving country. I loved Hank Williams. In fact, I even tutored his daughter, Chet Williams, about how to perform on a stage because she would be nervous, so nervous when I had met her and we were at a big showing in Las Vegas. And she goes, Dick, I just get so tied up when I get on the stage and I just almost don't know what to do. And I told her and I showed her how to do it, what to do. And I said, that's how you're going to address these people. I saw her a year later, and she came up and threw her arms around me and with tears and hugs, and she said, Dick, it works! It works! You know, and I said, all I told her was, be truthful and look into their eyes. The eye is the window of your soul. Be truthful to them and play what they want to hear, not what you think they should hear. And that's the reason why people want to relate themselves to something that has been played. Why do you think country music is so powerful? It's because it relates to everybody's feelings and woes, W-O-E-S,
yeah,
that they have been through. Why did you leave me today? You stomped on my heart and left that sucker flat. And I wrote songs like, it ain't right to argue because it hurts deep down inside. And everybody, when I was performing in Las Vegas, Reno and Tahoe for 20-some-odd years, the guys would come up and sit in the chairs in front in the casino and say, hey, Dale, I want you to play that It Ain't Right to Fight song. You know, stuff like that. And because he's nudging his wife or his girlfriend, you know.
Sure.
Now see those words, it ain't right to argue because it hurts deep down inside. It ain't right to argue because, you know, you hurt our pride and stuff like that. Just come over here and just, you know, touch me on the shoulder or like that. You don't have to say I'm sorry. Just nudge me and give me a smile and stuff like that. And that was all the words. And I'm going to release that one day. I'm going to do a record of all my country stuff and a mixture of everything. I played with all these people, Tex Ritter, Freddie Hart, Lefty Purcell. I mean, Tex Ritter gave me a double gun belt sub. I used to do fast draw. And he had it all engraved and everything like that with an eagle on it. And Johnny Cash used to have Lana, when he came to Ocala in St. Pete, he used to have her sitting on his lap singing with him on the stage.
Oh, wow.
He wanted to adopt her. He wanted to adopt her because she was Cherokee.
Yeah.
And him and June, they just loved Lana. She was 7 years old.
Wow, that's amazing.
And he wouldn't let her out of his sight. And then, you know, country has been my life. And I was with Town Hall Party in 1955 in Compton, California. It was a country show, and that's where Johnny and Lefty Purcell and my Lord, Gene Autry, all these, the Collins kids.
Oh, sure.
And Larry Collins and Laurie. And Larry showed me one of my first licks that, and he was being trained and taught by Joe Mathus. And I did a thing with Joe Mathus on one of his records to honor him. They asked me to do it on one of his albums. And, of course, I did the last thing with Glenn Campbell because he used to play rhythm guitar, lead and rhythm guitar for me on my records at Capitol Records.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I had a little country thing that was on radio. It was called Dick Dale and His Rhythm Wranglers. I get you. So,
yeah.
Oh, my God. All the guys that I used to imitate and Ernest Tubb, you know, stuff like that. Lefty Purcell, the Gate Wheeler coming down the track, Amateur 11, all these guys that sang those songs. That's what I was in me because I wanted to be a cowboy singer. And then I got on the country show, and then later on they found out I could play a trumpet, and they wanted me to play the trumpet because they had enough guitar country singers. So I left and went down to Balboa, and that's how I started at the Rendezvous Ballroom, playing on and blowing up amplifiers for Leo Fender.
Yeah.
So because I gave it that rhythm, I used to call it rockabilly.
Yeah.
And that's when I just made up that name. And that name, they didn't call it that name back in the 40s. And so then I called it, and the first song I learned was the Tennessee Waltz. And then I did it in regular style, and then I'd go, I was waltzing with my darling to the Tennessee Waltz with a ding, 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 like that.
Yeah.
And the difference between country, Western music, and country music is Western music are songs, words about places. Oh, give me land, lots of land, and the starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Those kind of songs. Tumble and tumbleweeds. It's all about places.
Huh, yeah.
And Rex Allen, Roy Rogers, they would sing those kind of songs. And the other one, when you talk about the country music, were songs about people. Why did you leave me? The day I started loving you again. It's all about people.
Yeah.
And notice every one of them songs about breakups. And why did you leave me? I just love I'm Lying Here with Linda on My Mind. Songs like that.
Yeah.
That's why I wrote songs, is because country tunes, because every time have a girlfriend or something like that and it doesn't work out, and then you go, why did you leave me today? Stuff like that.
Sure.
The day I started loving you again, all words about people. That's the difference between country and Western. And when you start putting a rock to it, and they're calling it rockabilly, that's where you got it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got an easy place to be. In my arms. Yeah, in my arms. I got a simple space to feel free. In my arms.
it on the now. Give me an easy way out. It's a lovely world that I got in my it on the reason, keep it on the now, give me an easy way.
Ink and Iron Festival comes to Nashville, Tennessee for the first time at the Bicentennial Mall Park at Municipal Auditorium August 6th to the 9th, featuring artists such as Merle Haggard, Wanda Jackson, Reverend Horton Heat, Shooter Jennings, Sharon Jones, and the Dap Kings. Also, the legends of Sun Records in the air-conditioned Big Top Tent, including Linda Gale Lewis, Carl Mann, W.S. Flew Collin, Danny B. Harvey, and Annie Marie Lewis, J.M. Van Eaton, Sleepy LaBeef, Stan Perkins, Rayburn Anthony, and so many more artists. But that's not all. See vaudeville and cabaret performers, along with the nation's top aerial performers, custom motorcycles, hot rods, and custom cars.
And don't forget the ink.
280 of the world's top tattoo artists will be on hand for your tattoo desires. That's the Ink and Iron Festival, August 6th to the 9th at the Bicentennial Mall Park in Nashville, Tennessee. Find us online at ink-n-iron.com. We're back on the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour. Now, we just heard Glenn Campbell from his Ghost on the Canvas project with In My Arms. That song featured Chris Isaac on backing vocals. Guest guitars, Brian Setzer, and our special guest today, guitar legend Dick Dale. Now, let's go back to 1960 for this single from Dick on Deltone Records. It's Jesse Pearl.
Well, I got a girl and her name is Jesse Pearl. Come on, yeah. Well, I got a girl and her name is Jesse Pearl. She's a cute little thing and I love her. Oh, yes, I do. Well, I love my baby, gonna tell the world. Well, I do. Well, I love my baby, gonna tell the world. Well, I do. Yeah, she's a cute little thing and I love her, indeed I do. Oh, well, Jesse Pearl, come on. Jesse Pearl, well, come on, honey. Ooh, yeah. Oh, well, her name was Jesse Pearl. She's my girl. Let's go, everybody. Yeah.
up, I'm gonna get my gun and shoot at you. Yeah, well, Jesse girl, oh, come on. Jesse girl, oh, well, oh, come on, honey. Her name is Jesse Pearl, she's my girl. Well, oh, well, her name is Jesse Pearl, she's my girl. Oh, well, her name is Jesse Pearl, she's my girl.
Our guest is guitarist Dick Dale. Now, among the many questions he gets asked over the years, one of the ones that is most often asked is, how does he get that Dick Dale sound?
And how I got my rhythm, I copied my rhythm from Gene Krupa on the strings. So I'd go like that, so people could know where every one beat is. Whereas other people, they just go, it's all the same.
Yeah.
I always go, so that way they can feel the imprint of the accentuation. And then that was the first time. That's why I wanted to make the big speakers with Leo Fender. That's why I needed the big power. I wanted my guitar to sound like Gene Krupa's drums. And that's how that came to be.
Yeah.
And so it was a mixture of the thick-bodied wood of the Stratocaster, the heavy-gauge strings, the Dick Dale output transformers, and the D130 15-inch JBL speakers, and the 3-foot-high by 2 feet wide, 12 inches deep cabinet. That combination makes my sound. Nothing else can. And when they designed output transformers, they only favored highs, mids, or lows, never all together. When Leo wound the output transformer, which gives you your sound, your color, and the power, he made it so that it favored highs, mids, and lows together. There's no transformer out there right now, even with Marshall. Marshall loved the Leo Fender, and they followed his wiring to the T, but they don't have the color and the thickness of the sound because they could not get the presence controls that gives you a certain tonation to give it that sound. Because when I A-B'd, if you know what I mean when you're saying you're A-B'ing
sure.
something, when I AB'd the biggest Marshall made to my dual showman of Dick Dale Transformer, it was costing me $15,000 just to fly my stuff over, just the equipment and back. And they were working on my showman amp when I was on the road. So I went and they had a whole bunch of people in the store there, sitting there watching me. And so I started playing through a big Marshall using my 15-inch D130. I said, well, that's loud, and you know, I can cheat a little bit, you know, on the dials, and that way, when I go to Europe, I could just rent a Marshall, because they didn't make any more Fenders like that. And so, that way, I said, well, if I can do that, boy, that'll be great. Then they brought my dual showman head out, and I A-B'd it. The minute I hit that string on that damn thing, everybody in the store went, no effing way, man. The Marshall didn't even compare to it.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't cheat.
Yeah.
I spent 3 days in Meridian, Mississippi with Petey, who loved Leo. And he wanted me to experiment with him to try to make an amp that would sound like my showman. And the best we could get with transistors, and the best we could get with 100 watts, it would flatten. It just would not go above. And, you know, to make a transistor to do what a 6K, a 6L6 or a 5881 tube does, it would cost you $10,000. You just can't do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of these things are what I created with Leo. And, of course, I started using the reverb on my guitar to sustain the note. And that's it, but it's not related to surf.
Yeah.
Because, once again, I got my rhythms and sound, my heavy percussion from Gene Krupa. And I got it from I had over 45 animals from all over the world. I had them all. Mountain lions, I raised them from babies. I didn't put them in cages like zoos. They had 50-foot long pens that were 25 feet across, and my African lion would come into my house with me, and she would leap on the bed and break the bed, and I had to put cement bricks underneath and stuff like that. She would try to turn around in the mobile home and break the walls because it was not wide enough for her. Her body was so powerful.
Yeah.
I had my lioness there, my mountain lions there, jaguars. I had hawks, falcon, beagles. I took care of sea lions so that they would stop from dying from pneumonia. I had baby elephants, had bears. You name it, I had it, over 45 different species. And whenever I'd come home, the mountain lion would go, wow, wanted me to come into the running pen with them, the cage with them, and everything to play with them. At nighttime, 5:30, my African lions would go, like that.
Yeah.
And I would do these things on my guitar, imitating my animals. And that's why I said, you know, Jurassic Park, you know, just like a pterodactyl, you know. And,
sure.
That's what I think of when I do those slides.
Yeah.
I think of all these animals that I had lived with for 35 years, and I made their calling sounds on my guitar with my hand. And then the next stage was, so the first stage was King Koopa. Second stage was my animals calling me. And the third stage was me being chewed up in a damn wall wave and spit up and thrown out and washed up unconscious on the beach. And the sound when I was in the curl and the roar. So that was an addition also. But the most associated with was the animals that it comes out of my guitar.
Yeah.
That's why the guitar was called, somebody named it the Beast.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like your beast.
Sure.
That they had visited me, and, you know, and they heard them talk with me and call to me. Because I had tanned feed them, I'd sit in the cage with them and feed them, you know, frozen chicken necks, you know, one at a time, and just hand it to their mouth. That's how my music came to be. Yeah, when I would be in the, you know, I'd be in a tube. I'd stick my finger in the wall to hold myself into the tube, and I'd have a sound, you know, and then the roar of the wave as it's just putting me through the meat grinder.
Yeah.
But once I get into it and some body surfing. I mean, I was the first person to break a 10-foot board, 11-foot board at the Wedge in Balboa, California, at Newport Beach, break it in half.
Wow.
And I was washed up a couple of times from body surfing there, unconscious when you hit, because you just hit and it breaks shoulder blades. Yeah. When the surf comes up in the wintertime, they always have ambulances there. People come from all over the body surf the Wedge. So, and that's why I named one of my songs called The Wedge.
Yeah.
You know, it's Dick Dale music.
From 1963, that's Dick Dale and The Wedge. Now, Dick explains an often misconception that he developed the reverb for a surf sound. The reverb that he came up with was actually started for something else.
The reverb, they called the surf sound, the wet splashy sound of the reverb. I didn't create that for that. I created the reverb because I didn't have a vibrato on my voice. And I wanted my voice to sustain when I sang all my songs.
Yeah.
Like you push on a pedal, sustain pedal, it sustains the note. So me and Leo started trying to design something, and he didn't like stuff like that. He does not like stereo. He wants monaural. He does not like any of those things that you put switches on the ground and you put your foot on. That's why I never used any. I got all my sounds from what I did with my hands on my strings. I turned around and we created Echoplex, which was an echo machine. And I didn't like that, but it became a favorite to people wanting, so it went on the market to be sold. But we designed that. We designed a lot of things together. I did the first wireless with him, and I didn't like it. And whenever I came up with an idea, he would try to make it. And then what happened was I was at home, and I have a Hammond organ. And on the Hammond organ, there was a button, and it said reverb. When I hit the reverb, it sustained the note. So we created all these different things on the guitar and the Stratocaster. And then I pioneered, it was the organ. And so what I did was I took the whole Hammond, the organ apart. Inside, I found this can, and it said reverb, Hammond organ. And I go, that's it. And inside that was a couple of strings. And I turned around and took it off.
Yeah.
And I brought it to Leo. He said, Leo, this is it. This is it. So we made a standing reverb box, three tubes in it, 6K6. So anyway, the three tubes, 12AX, 12AX, T7s, and 7025s. And I plugged in my microphone, the type that Frank Sinatra used to carry with him everywhere, the Shure Dynamic Birdcage, we call it, Mike. And I plugged the microphone into the reverb, and I sang through it, put it through a separate Bogan amplifier, and I sounded like Dean Martin. That was the beginning of me being able to sing with a reverb on my voice. So a week went by, and me, I'm always experimenting. So I even experimented with piano wires on the guitar. But anyway, so what happened was I plugged my guitar into it. I said, I wonder what that would be. And it took away the dryness of my the guitar, and it made it that splashy sound. But we had already sold over 88,000 albums. That would be like 4 million today.
Sure.
Over 88,000 albums on Surfer's Choice. That's the picture of me surfing on the cover.
Yeah. Down.
There was no reverb used on that. And Ms. Lou was on that. Let's Go Trip In Everything.
Yeah.
The reverb came later. But writers, they picked up on the thing going, oh, yeah, the splashy sound of the surf.
Reach Around Rodeo Clowns are back with Rockabilly Deluxe, now available on vinyl.
He's the king of the slot car track.
Rockabilly Deluxe.
Yeah, wild, crazy, and out of control.
With their sixth and most ambitious album, Rockabilly Deluxe, the Reach Around Rodeo Clown's momentum shows no signs of slowing down.
I got the shakes.
With their Cash Meets Clash style, the Reach Around Rodeo Clowns are back with Rockabilly Deluxe.
Now available on vinyl.
From Lanark Records. This is Jammin' James Riley, and we just heard Knight Rider from our guest today, Dick Dale, from his Checkered Flag album. DickDale.com has all of his upcoming tour dates, including June 3rd, at the Hard Rock Cafe in Las Vegas. June 19th, Dick comes back to Hollywood at the Whiskey-A-Go-Go. In July and August, he's heading out to Denver, Omaha, Madison, Wisconsin, Chicago, Illinois, Indianapolis, Cleveland, Asbury Park, New Jersey, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, and so many more. He's going to be one busy fellow this summer. Also, we just got word that he will be headlining Viva Las Vegas in April of 2016. Stay tuned for more details on that. Now, one of the most popular rock instrumentals of all time, some would say the most popular of all time, is Dick Dale's version of Miserloo. Now, he explains how this song came about. It from a simple question from a kid one night.
And when this kid, when I first came to California, I played it when I was open to the Rendezvous. This young kid, about probably 7 years old, said, "Wow, you play and sing really neat, you know." And I said, he says, "Can you play something on one string?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll do that. Come back tomorrow night, you know, and Saturday, Friday and Saturday." And so I went home and I laid in the bed and I had tears in my eyes, saying, "Uh-oh, they're gonna find out that I'm a fake. I don't know how to play the guitar really." I started saying, "What am I gonna do?" And then I started saying, "Well, let me try Miserloo." So I tried Miserloo, and I said, "Oh, that's just too slow, you know, the way it's supposed to be played." And I said, "They're not going to like that." And then I was thinking of Gene Cooper's drumming style. So I just went, like that. And I played it like that. And that's how it was born. And that's the whole story about that.
Dick Dale's Miserloo from 1962. Now, the song has been featured in so many TV shows, commercials, and movies. including one that turned him onto a whole new audience in the fall of 1994 with Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction.
When we did Pulp Fiction, Quentin Tarantino came up, my bass player, while I was on stage, and he gave him a note. Said, my name's Quentin Tarantino, I got to talk to Dick Dale. Well, he didn't know who Quentin Tarantino was, so he threw the note away. So then Quentin found me in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And he said, Dick, I've been listening to your music for 100 years. And he goes, it's so powerful. And he says, when people make movies, they make a movie and they put the music to it afterwards by watching the rushes every day. But he says, I do it differently. He said, I play a song and the song generates the energy force, the power in my mind to create a movie from the way the song is played. So he said, I would love to use your song when you played it as the masterpiece of what you just played to create a masterpiece of a movie to complement the masterpiece of your song. So of you playing that song, Mizzaloo. And because he was so humble and so nice, and I knew that he had doors slammed in his face from all the big wigs, that I just said, you know what? And then he said, I said, who you got in? And he said, well, John Travolta. And I said, wow, because once again, John Travolta had doors slammed in his face because he was typecast. And they said, you can only do this kind of stuff. Plus, he was a pilot, and I'm a pilot. So I said, wow, you know what? Go for it. And then I was in Amsterdam performing. He came to Amsterdam, stayed at the same hotel I did. When I was home, I finally got a phone call, and it said, Dick, I'm sending a limo to pick you up and have you to come down to Universal Studios. I'm doing a pre-showing of Pulp Fiction. And I said, sure. So I went down, sat down, and I watched it. And all of a sudden, bam, there it goes. She goes, I'm going to kill every one of your mothers. And my guitar goes, yeah, started the whole movie off. So the end result was this poor guy now turned out to have the last laugh on everybody because he ended up being the president of the Cannes Film Festival. He ended up doing these movies and so successful, he had the last laugh on everybody that didn't want to give him the help that he needed and the time of day. Yeah, and look at John Travolta.
Yeah.
Now he ends up getting, he's flying commercial jets, for Christ's sake. I only fly a twin engine. That's it.
Yeah.
And so he got the last laugh, God bless him. And he started them doing the movie. And, you know, that is so great when Jack destroys the giant and Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah.
And, you know, and David and Goliath and whatever you call it. And so I was so thrilled and so happy. And then one night on the Jimmy Kimmel show, they wanted him to direct a complete Jimmy Kimmel show. And he goes, well, I ain't going to direct it unless I get Dick Dale here and go from there. And so to have that kind of neatness take place and come to the surface. And that was one of the most wonderful moments.
It's really amazing to see what that song has done over the years. And you know, obviously it was a huge hit for you in the 60s and revitalized again, even for the movies and commercials.
Well, my parents and my father's side, and Michael played the oud, and they used to play it on the oud, and they had the Arabic drum called terbaki. And you go boom, 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 and the Egyptians, the belly dancers would come out and dance to that rhythm, and the song was played slow. In fact, it's on one of my CDs that I was explaining it to my musicians that how Mizzaloo should be played from the old people, because and the people say it's a Greek folk song. Well, it's an Arabic song because Mizzaloo, the word means the Egyptian, and it is an Arabic love song. Wayno habibi, wayno habibi akhtain, where are you, my sweetheart? And so it's played as a love song. It goes da 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 da, like that. Even Russia, when they played it, they made a big, unbelievable presentation of it with this girl doing her dancing and the singing, and oh, it was amazing. Well, I was showing it to my guys on this old acoustic guitar that one of the drummers had picked out of the water in Mexico and floating from the ocean, and we used it as a stage prop while we were recording, just leaning against the wall. And I picked it up and started to play it, and I was showing them how Mizzle was supposed to be played. And while I was doing it, at my drummer at the time, they turned on the tape, and I didn't know it, and they recorded it.
Wow.
So we put it on the ending of one of my CDs, and when the CD ended, the last song, in fact, it wasn't listed at all. The last song was just the last song. But if you continued to play, let the CD play from the silence of the ending of the last song, you would hear you coming out of the fog, like dun 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 dun, dun. It came in.
Wow.
The guitar played the way it's supposed to be played.
Yeah.
And then it, when I played the whole song, it faded out. And nobody knows about that unless the disc jockey let it play a couple of seconds longer.
Yeah.
That's how that came to be.
Hey, Dick, this is Mike Love of the Beach Boys. Haven't seen you in a while. Do you know that you have the same birth date as my dad? You're a much younger guy, but still, that's pretty far out. You're a Taurus, no bull, huh? Anyway, have a happy birthday and keep on rocking. You make other guitar players look like junior high school girls trying to play guitar. You're the best. Thank you.
We've got this first part of interview is around your birthday on May 4th. We just heard a greeting from Mike Love. And there's an interesting story with the Beach Boys opening up for you guys early on.
Yeah, they're just, my dad used to give them $10.
To split among them, right?
Yeah, just to have them play.
Yeah.
And everybody wanted to open for Dick Dale for nothing, and they still do it today.
Yeah.
They do it in a lot of the different venues. You want to open for Dick Dale? Come on in, let's see what you do, sell a bunch of tickets, and if you're good, then we'll pay you the next time you come back.
Yeah.
I mean, I just got through doing a concert with Kid Rock, for Christ's sake, in Florida.
Wow, that's
and,
pretty cool.
And the next day, the web stuff, look up Dick Dale and Kid Rock, and somebody was telling me, the bands that followed Dick Dale had a lot of courage to follow Dick Dale.
Sure.
And that was kind of neat.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Tom Ingram presents the second annual Rockabilly Rockout, October 1st through the 4th at the Gold Coast Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. DJs, vendors, all-night bars, and artist performances from Jittery Jack, Furious, Hayden Thompson, Bloodshot Bill, The Sabres, Jack Baymore, Ruby Ann, Mark and the Wild Ones, Rumble King, Cash O'Reilly, and lots more. Tickets on sale now at rockabillyrockout.com. This is the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour. Much more with Dick Dale in the next few episodes. Let's hear some brand new music from Joe Bonamassa covering Muddy Waters, and this one from the Sonics, brand new, I Don't Need No Doctor.
Yeah.
You've been listening to the Rockabilly and Blues Radio Hour. Stay tuned next time for much more with Dick Dale. Until then, it's Jam and James Riley saying keep on rockin'.